Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 126, Indigo Dreams. Monday, July 4th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: The Back Porch, The Front Porch, Off the Shelf, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. There will also be two prize drawings during today's episode. One prize is the June prize for the Eat Your Words read-along, and at the very end of the episode, I will be announcing the winner of the Tamar Fingering Weight Yarn, generously contributed by Claire of the New Hampshire Knits podcast. And she is the proprietor of The Woolly Thistle. I'd like to extend a special welcome to some folks who have introduced themselves on the Ravelry threads lately. There's Debbie from Pittsburgh. She is Whimsically Knit on Ravelry. Kate from Southampton, Mass., who is Kate Knit Socks on Ravelry. And Lori, who is Saltbox. Welcome, and thank you so much for listening to the show and for joining the Ravelry group. On the back porch is the Paper Cranes shawl. This is a design by Lori Versace. I've been knitting it for quite a while, and it has consumed over 1,000 yards of a light fingering weight yarn. I've knit this on US size 4 needles, using Swan's Island fingering weight yarn in the indigo color, and I had talked in the past that there was quite a bit of crocking or indigo residue continuing to release from the yarn as I knit, which resulted in blue fingers. But I'm very, very pleased with the final project. Since I used the US size 4, which were specified by the pattern, and my gauge tends to be just a little bit on the loose side, I was not able to complete all 519 pattern rows. I got to row 511, and then I began the ribbed border for this shawl. The shawl is an asymmetrical stole with a ribbed border on all four sides, and the center panel is stockinette with the beautiful paper crane motif. The Make Paper Crane direction creates a small hole in the fabric, and those holes increase as the knitting continues to provide this metaphorical interpretation of a flock of cranes taking off. So it's simple and elegant. I really like the way it has knit up in this yarn, and I think with the indigo blue color, it's a very versatile and useful wardrobe piece. Something great always to have in your bag in case things get a little chilly on summer evenings or in air conditioning. So this was a big investment of time and also of yarn, but I'm very, very pleased with the final project, and that is over 1,000 yards to add to my stash dash goal of 5,000 yards. I haven't done all of the metric conversions. As I've mentioned in the past, I'm an imperial girl, so if I'm going to work with metrics, I always have to start from the beginning and do the conversions. So my goal for the summer is around 5,000 yards, and this is the first major project to enter those stash dash goals. Since I completed a knitted project, I've cast on another one. And on the front porch is Geyser Stretch. This is a Stephen West design, And I've gone from my beautiful US size 4 signature needles from my friend Mary Beth to some US size 7 needles and worsted weight yarn. And that's a good idea to alternate stitch gauge and needle size and yarn type so that you don't get too fatigued while you're knitting. So this is a very different approach to the next project. Geyser Stretch is knit on worsted weight, as I mentioned, and the yarn I'm using is from Foster Sheep Farm. It's Kettle Dyed by Carol, and I made this purchase during the Washington County Farm and Fiber Tour following a very interesting introductory lecture on color theory from Jacqueline Salem. She translated her knowledge of color theory into color theory for crafters, and she talked about different aspects of color theory and what that means for a knitter or for a quilter in choosing materials for your project. I was very taken by this notion of analogous colors. I had always been thinking about complementary colors or, you know, colors with a very stark contrast. But she talked about analogous colors and how it could give, you know, kind of a sophisticated variation to a project. And at Carol's shop, I found some kettle dyed yarn in sort of a drab olive green color. So I bought 2 skeins of that and then a very vibrant acid green color. So these are both greens. They're analogous to one another on the color wheel, but they can be very interesting knit up into a project. The Geyser Stretch shawl is an elongated shawl. It's asymmetrical, but it's not starkly so. It's still a long but shallow shawl design. And I think it's a good choice for this analogous color pairing because there are stripes in the shawl, and the stripes vary in their stitch texture. So the main color is knit in stockinette, and then the contrasting color is knit in garter. So it protrudes from the shawl. I'm using that olive green color as the main color of the shawl, and it will also be color C for the border, and then that acid green for those garter stitch stripes. So even though they're close to each other on the color wheel, I feel like that acid green really does pop and creates an interesting look to the shawl. This is knitting up very quickly in typical Stephen West style. It's kind of an addictive knit, repetitive, rhythmic, and very easy to memorize. The pattern calls for US size 9 needles, but I've gone down to a 7, and I really like the kind of fabric that I'm getting with this yarn. It's Tour de Fleece, the season for spinners. The Tour de France began on Saturday, July 2nd, and spinners all over the world began their companion competition, the Tour de Fleece. It's a competition primarily with yourself, and spinners are encouraged to set personal goals and work to meet them during the 3 weeks of the tour. My personal goal is to spin on a drop spindle and on my wheel every day of the tour and to take breaks on the rest days. And I have 3 projects going. One project is the Hello Sunshine Batlings from Hobbledehoy, which I'm spinning on a turtle-made Turkish spindle, and that's a Go Everywhere With Me project. The other 2 projects are on my Louette S10 double treadle wheel, which I love, and I have 5 bobbins for that now, so I'm able to work on multiple projects on the same wheel. So one project I have begun already, and this is to do a long color gradient with naturally colored fibers and create a 2-ply. I'm using Jacob in a very white or off-white color, and then I've separated several values of gray and brown tones from a fleece from my friend Kathy Stanwood, who is one of my colleagues in the Sheep to Shawl class. She brought an East Frisian Tunis cross fleece. It was not a spinning fleece. It wasn't shorn as a spinning fleece. And so it has a number of challenges, but I really do feel like I have made up for those shortcomings with my fiber prep. And now I'm spinning my carefully prepared and carded roll legs. And the spinning is going really well. I don't have too many small bits or clumps in the fiber. It's spinning up very fine, and I am about halfway through the second bobbin. And then I plan to ply these two together, and that may involve removing some small bits of the singles to preserve the color changes from off-white all the way through very dark brown. I'm really excited about the spinning with that. This is a little bit thinner than my usual default spin. And so my hope with that is I can get about 500 yards of a two-ply fingering or light fingering weight yarn. My third and final spinning project is to spin some Three Waters Farm fiber that I received as a Christmas present from Samuel. I have two braids. They're both a Polworth silk blend with a high silk content, 40%. So it's a bit of a challenging spin. And I have one braid in a green, a spring green tonal, and then another braid in golden hues. And my plan for each of those is a two-ply fingering weight yarn. This is also spinning quite fine. So frequent rest breaks are very important for working with that fine of a single. I'm pleased to be participating in Tour de Fleece on the Three Waters Farm team. There's excellent conversation going on. I love seeing everyone's projects, the beautiful fiber that they've purchased from Marianne, and she's the proprietor of Three Waters Farm. She has also been on the threads saying she was absolutely gobsmacked by everyone's projects, and it does seem like so many people are on Team Three Waters Farm this year. So there's some great camaraderie, and I'm getting some excellent ideas for color management and fiber prep that I can use in the future. Off the shelf, there has been great participation in the Eat Your Words Read Along, which is lasting all season long, June, July, and August. Yarns at Yanhu listeners are invited to select a work of food memoir, food journalism, or food-related fiction. There's great chatter on the Ravelry thread, and there are still reading suggestions and film suggestions coming in. I'm reading Coming Home to Eat by Gary Paul Nabon, and the reading is going much easier now that I understand a little bit, the source of the tension. It seems that the author of this work is torn between relaying the great quantity of knowledge he has about this topic and relaying his own personal experience with this experiment of eating locally. And at the times where the writing seems to slow down and feel a little bit muddled or confused, I have come to the conclusion that that's the struggle that he's having, which makes me a little more empathetic and a little bit of a more engaged reader now that I have made that realization. I'm also reading Around the World in Six Glasses by Tom Standage, and this is a really great read. it's, I guess some folks would say it's kind of dry, but for me, this is the kind of read that goes quickly because it's this great form of nonfiction that seeks to review vast periods of cultural history through a single lens. And I think maybe this is the kind of read you either love it or you don't. It's rather polarizing. I love it because I have spent so much time teaching and learning cultural history that it can be refreshing to revisit Mesopotamia, ancient Egypt, Greece, and Rome, but through the lens of wine and beer. I find that I don't need to pay attention to absolutely everything. I can just fit this new information into the scaffolding that I already have about that location and that time period and all the other history that I've learned. Lisa of Fibernymph Dyeworks mentioned that she had been listening to this Around the World in Six Glasses as an audiobook on a road trip and had enjoyed it. And I think that would be a really great way to take in a work like this, is on a road trip, because you don't have to pay attention to absolutely everything. But it's kind of fun and you get some interesting factoids and information. I have also been thinking a lot about beverages as I read, and I think maybe during the hashtag Power Pantry this summer, I'll be experimenting with some different kinds of beverages as a way to extend my reading experience of this book. There is absolutely fantastic chatter going on the Ravelry thread, and I want to share one contribution in particular, because today is Independence Day in the United States, and Jenny, who goes by Salmon Knits on Ravelry, has shared a little bit from the book she's reading, Cooked, by Michael Pollan. She shared some passages that I feel they bear repeating on this podcast and will be of interest to you. Jenny writes, I'm about halfway through Michael Pollan's Cooked, but I keep thinking about the introduction most of all. He makes a lot of observations that remind me of conversations we have about the fiber crafts. I'm going to dig up a few quotes that I think might be of particular relevance to this group. You can basically replace cooking with knitting or whatever. And so that's what I did as I read through these passages, and one in particular when I thought about replacing cooking with knitting or sewing your own garments. It was incredibly powerful. So this is from Michael Pollan. He writes, perhaps what most commends cooking to me is that it offers a powerful corrective to this way of being in the world, a corrective that is still available to all of us. In a world where so few of us are obliged to cook at all anymore, to choose to do so is to lodge a protest against specialization, against the total rationalization of life, against the infiltration of commercial interests into every last cranny of our lives. To cook for the pleasure of it, to devote a portion of our leisure to it, is to declare our independence from the corporations seeking to organize our every waking moment into yet another occasion for consumption. It is to reject the debilitating notion that, at least while we're at home, production is work best done by someone else, and the only legitimate form of leisure is consumption. This dependence, marketers call freedom. Well, wow, I just thought that was a really powerful instance of articulating what it means to make the personal political. And it caused me to think about the argument that I am creating in making my own things, and served as a caution against mistaking purchasing materials with this endless invitation toward consumption that it seems we have in the United States for sure, and I'm certain that in other parts of the world, folks feel the same, that there's just these constant messages toward consumption. And so it really, this aligns with my own handmade journey, certainly my handmade wardrobe journey. And I just want to thank Jenny so much for contributing that passage. It's time for the June drawing for the Eat Your Words Get Along. All you have to do to enter is to participate on the Eat Your Words thread on Ravelry, and there will be a drawing each month, June, July, and August. June's prize has been generously contributed by Carol of Foster Sheep Farm. It is a skein of her sport weight superwash yarn, and this is U.S. made superwash, and Carol has kettle dyed it. I'm calling the colorway creamsicle because there are creamy undyed parts and beautiful shades of orange in this yarn. I think it would be so much fun to knit up during the summertime. When I checked the thread to do this random drawing, there were 118 posts. And the winner is post number 71, Selket, who is Maya. Maya, please get in contact with me on personal message via Ravelry with your mailing address, and I will get this beautiful yarn right out to you. July's prize comes from Joanna of Knit Spin Farm, and it's a collection of her beautiful note cards with photographs of her farm animals on them. And Joanna is a wonderful photographer who is blessed with some really photogenic farm friends. So her note cards are really excellent. Ever-expanding skill set. The month of June was devoted to cooking with coconut and coconut products for hashtag Power Pantry, and I took some coconut flour, coconut milk, and dried coconut on my trip to Vermont to visit my sister Jessica for a few days. There, we use a Nourished Kitchen recipe for a coconut cake. Coconut flour is often used for gluten-free cooking, and it has the quality of being incredibly absorbent. So the recipe for a layer cake, 2 8-inch cake layers, called for 2 cups of coconut milk, up to 3/4 of a cup of honey, and 12 eggs. Wow, that's a lot of liquid. I ended up working on something else, and Jessica actually made the cake. So we were sort of critiquing it afterwards and thinking about, you know, its properties, because I had never had a coconut flour cake before. I don't usually make gluten-free recipes. And Jessie was sort of mulling over what she could have or would have done differently. This recipe from Nourished Kitchen comes with an icing or frosting recipe. She didn't make that, but she did have the stroke of genius to top the cake layers with dried coconut so that there was a little bit of interest and texture on the top. The main unusual property of this cake is that it doesn't rise at all. The batter is very thick and dense, and my experience with a cake with eggs and a little bit of baking soda is that there will be some amount of rise of the dough in the pan as it cooks. This did not happen. So the cake is incredibly dense. It's moist and the texture is pleasant, but it's dense. She served it with a raspberry puree and a dollop of really high-quality vanilla ice cream that she had made. And I think that's a great way to serve this cake. It serves even one 8-inch round layer can serve 10 to 12 people because this cake is really dense and you don't need a lot of it. I also think it would be good as a snack cake or a breakfast cake. It's very high fiber, and it's high calorie, high protein as well with all of that egg and the coconut in it. So it may be better even as a breakfast food or a snack food than it is for a dessert. When I came home, I tried the recipe again, and I halved the recipe, so I just made one layer, and I tried a technique that usually yields a spongier, fluffier texture when I use eggs, and that is to beat the egg whites separately with a little cream of tartar and then fold them into the batter. So what I did is I added 3 of the 6 eggs whole and then 3 egg yolks. And then I took 3 egg whites and beat them to soft peaks using a little bit of cream of tartar to preserve that foamy quality. And then I folded that into the batter. Nothing. It did not look remotely fluffier. It did not rise in the pan. That coconut flour just absorbed all of the egg white. And if anything, I think it came out even more dense than the cake that Jesse had made. So I'm not sure where to go with this recipe. If maybe I'm just trying to undermine something that is a constant with coconut flour. But in any case, the taste of this cake is very good. And I think it has a lot of great attributes. It just isn't a fluffy cake. And I did not have any success trying to make it a fluffy cake either. In July, I'm looking forward to cooking with Farmers Market Bounty. We have several different farmers markets on different days of the week here in the Delaware Water Gap area. And my plan is to do as little supermarket shopping as possible and to capitalize on what's already in my pantry and what I can find at local farmers markets. I will be trying some recipes from, what's the name of this great blog? Dishing Up the Dirt. I follow Andrea Bemis on Instagram, and she has a CSA that she runs with her partner in the Northwest. Her blog has beautifully photographed, simple recipes using a lot of fresh produce. One that's caught my eye is grilled sugar snap peas with a spicy peanut sauce, which just really strikes my fancy as an Asian-inspired dish, and also grilling something that I would normally not think to grill, like sugar snap peas. So I'll be trying some recipes from that blog, and I look forward to tips, photographs, links to all of the things that you are cooking with. And it would also be great to find out what's in season at your local farmers market. Maybe it's summertime where you are. Maybe it's another season, and so you're looking at different kinds of produce in your local markets. I'd love to see and hear what you're cooking with, and use hashtag PowerPantry to tag your posts on social media. And so forth. I have lots of plans for working on my handmade wardrobe this summer, and likely I will devote a lot of time in future episodes to some chatter and chinwagging about that. But first, I'd like to tell you about some indigo dyeing that I did with my sister Jessica while I was visiting Vermont. I had given Jessica a copy of the Modern Natural Dyer for her Christmas gift, as well as a variety of dye stuffs to play with. And she was really eager to try some indigo dyeing. So we used some directions in the Modern Natural Dyer and some things that we had found online. I think the Dharma Trading Company has some great instructional guides that you can print out. So we used that to make an indigo vat, and then we each dyed some linen fabric to make a pinafore. And this is kind of a self-drafted pattern that Jessica had created. So I dip dyed my pinafore, and she just threw hers into the dye pot, and then she gave me some bias tape that she had made, so I dyed that in indigo as well. And then she just kept running into the house and coming out with more and more things to throw into the dye pot. We had originally weighed what we thought would be the amount of fabric for the dye that we created. And it turned out that our vat was much more productive than we originally anticipated. So we could just keep dyeing things, and we noticed that different types of fabric took the dye in different ways. Like a 100% lightweight cotton just seemed to suck up the dye very quickly, whereas linen gave like a more muted effect. And we just kept throwing things into the dye vat and letting them, you know, oxidize completely in the sun and then putting them back in. We just had a really great time. It was a sunny day, which was the perfect condition with a light breeze to be working on this dye vat, because everything was drying very quickly, and then you could determine whether you wanted to put something back in the pot or not. Upon completing our dyeing, we thought it would be fun to take a trip into Brandon, Vermont, which isn't too far from Jessica's farmstead. We went to Creative Fiber Designs, and there we met up with Jenny and Devin of the Handmade and Woolen podcast. They were very gracious in working with our off-the-grid communication systems, and initially we thought maybe we wouldn't meet up, and then it turns out we could. So I had a lovely chat with them and found out a little bit more about their transition to Vermont life from Brooklyn, New York, and how they're enjoying the area where they live and their own crafting adventures. So that was a very nice visit. And they took off, and then Jessica and I did some shopping. Creative Fiber Designs in Brandon carries Wing and a Prayer Farm yarn. And I did make a purchase and some for a swap partner as well. And then I discovered that they carry Liberty fabrics. So I purchased my first yard of Liberty fabric. If you are near Brandon, Vermont, or passing through, it could be worth a visit during the month of July, because they're running a 25% off sale on their Liberty fabrics for the entire month. I decided that I would not save this fabric as precious, that I would do something with it right away. And so I have already cut into my Liberty fabric, and I have plans for a self-drafted top using Liberty for the front and a black linen for the back of the top. So I'm taking the fearless approach, and I will have a lot more news to report about some new patterns that I purchased and the sewing that I'm doing to add to my handmade wardrobe all summer long. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that in a future episode. But before we say goodbye for today, I have to do the drawing for the beautiful skein of Tamar yarn contributed by Claire of the Woolly Thistle. Claire has recently made a transition from having an Etsy shop to having her own .com for the Woolly Thistle. I will link to it in the show notes. And in celebration of her shop opening, she contributed this beautiful skein of fingering weight yarn. The color is like a olive and forest green. It's made up of a number of different fibers, and it's just spectacular. So thank you to everyone who entered the drawing for the giveaway. The lucky winner is the one who wrote post number 18, and that is Speejo Sherry from Skokie, Illinois. And she reported that she likes the ribbon in the shop the best. Claire is restocking the shop periodically over the course of the summer, and she is also interested in any requests you have for her to carry different kinds of farm fiber and yarn, and also other products that may interest you for her shop. So you should definitely check it out. Sherry, please get in contact with me with your mailing address, and I will get that skein right out to you.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yunhu group on Ravelry, leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or following me on social media. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.